Hello everybody, my name is Owen, and this is Owen's Guide for Friday, 3rd of March, 2023. Yes, it's kind of been a delay, past 2 days, kind of been up to a lot of things, let's just say that. I think on Wednesday especially, I was out and about. You can check out my Instagram and TikTok and see who I was out a few days back on. That's at Sayed_Mown99, follow me there if you can. But yeah, there's been a bit of a delay, and I sincerely apologize. Again, it's just me being lazy and slacking until now. But I thought I might as well get over this and obviously move on. But we've had Mobile World Congress this past week in Barcelona, and the entire mobile industry kind of gathers to share the latest innovations, concepts, and new offerings that they offer to everyone in the industry, everyone from telecom companies all the way down to vendors of teleco gear and smartphone brands, especially that want to sell the products to both consumers and cellular networks, and obviously get deals with them in for to offer their products to end consumers. But this year's Mobile World Congress, a lot of trends have kind of been shown. On the cellular end of things, there's been, again, talk of open radio access networks and even virtual radio access network software being made, where you can sort of run it in the cloud. And so it handles some of the processing and back-end tasks of, again, running a mobile network and sending data and information and billing. And that's sitting in the cloud now. And that's pretty cool to see. On top of everything, there's also kind of a lot of vendors and exhibitors have been showing off private 5G networks. Now, I've not gone to Spain to cover the event. I wish, that would be wonderful. If there's any smartphone brand that's listening, do drop an email if you want to send me over to Spain for the next World Mobile World Congress. That'd be great. But anyways, this is Gadget Talk, and we're here to talk about phones and things like that. So let's talk about a whole lot of new phones, or more or less, you think about it, the global variant of these phones, because the Xiaomi, Honor, and Realme's latest flagship smartphones, let's just say, are really the masterpiece or magical devices that they brought out. And this is basically the global variant, because they've already kind of been revealed in China many months back, in a way. So yeah, let's just get right into it. So first is Xiaomi. Xiaomi showed off the global variant, the worldwide, what the rest of the world will be getting with the Xiaomi 13 series, the 13 and the 13 Pro. What you're kind of getting is top-notch displays, a perfect battery and fast charging capability, and best-in-class cameras, because guess what? They teamed up with Leica to offer quote-unquote a pro-grade smartphone experience, and really letting you shoot masterpieces from your phone. So basically, Leica's collaboration with if you know Leica, they've kind of done collabs with Lenovo/Motorola and Huawei, which is the most iconic. Well, everyone knows Leica for in the smartphone world is their iconic type, with Huawei on a bunch of phones, covering the lenses and the software. And Xiaomi, and their latest collaboration with Xiaomi covers lenses and software and modes especially. So in the camera app, you'll get access to Leica vibrant and authentic modes, so you get particular photos with certain aesthetic bits and bobs and tweaks, kind of, along with the Vario Simicron 1.19x2.2/14-75 SPH lens. Leica makes lenses, of course, and Xiaomi's decided to use their lenses in their phones. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And this is along with the fact, and also some of the software features, like the coloring that's come from Leica, and some of the modes, including the shutter button of a Leica camera that's in it. So that's obviously, you know, the little touches. But Xiaomi also has brought some serious punch in their photography game. They've built their own AI computational photography with the imaging engine, as they call it. So it improves capture speeds according to Xiaomi, and as I said, automatically focuses on certain subjects with Pro Focus. So that's on the regular and the Pro. The Pro, on the other hand, supports 10-bit RAW This is again supported for Lightroom and Photoshop, so that's pretty cool in a way. And both phones allow you to create videos in Dolby Vision HDR, like the iPhone, on the other hand. So that's pretty interesting, and hyper optical image stabilization. So when it comes to the camera, it's all about shooting a masterpiece. So that's pretty interesting in a way. That is, and then in terms of display, pretty much. Now we just jump to the specs real quick, because it's the global variant now, and you're probably wondering about the differences. It's not much, it's not significant enough to warrant talking much further in detail, but on top of the, in terms of specs really, the Xiaomi 13, the regular 13, comes with the same lens system, but you get a 54 megapixel total wide angle camera, a IMX 800 sensor, along with a 10 megapixel telephoto and 12 megapixel ultra wide angle camera, along with all those Leica lens and modes included, a 32 megapixel selfie camera right off the bat, pretty much. Along, on the other hand, the Pro comes with a 50 megapixel wide angle camera, 1-inch sensor. Now this is the beautiful part about the Pro. It's got a 1-inch IMX 989 sensor, so it's coming quite deadly close to mirrorless cameras in terms of quality. I've not used the 13 Pro, so I can't tell you the camera quality straight away, but I can kind of sense from the spec sheet that it'll look incredible. The photos that'll come out of it, the shots at night mode photos will be incredible. 50 megapixel telephoto camera with focal shift, according to the specs here. 50 megapixel ultra wide angle. So this is overall, if I'm correct, a triple 50 megapixel camera. So that's pretty awesome in a way. A 30 megapixel selfie camera right over there too. So that's pretty awesome. That is, and again, also comes with some of the Leica features that we've all come to know on both, also on the regular. In terms of display, you get 120Hz FHD Plus 6.36-inch AMOLED 2400x1080 display. It's 120Hz, and it's got adaptive sync, pretty much. And whereas on the other hand, the Pro, and this is the other big difference for you display-wise, is you have a same refresh rate, 6.73-inch AMOLED display, WQHD Plus, 3200x1440, E6 OLED panel from, I think, Samsung, I believe, if that's correct. Plus, you get adaptive refresh rate from 1 hertz, to 120Hz. I don't know why I said megahertz. 1 to 120Hz in a way. And you get max HDR peak brightness of 1900 nits, P3 color gamut supported. So this is also a beefier ultra masterpiece display. And on the other hand, the other display... same panel material, same brightness, but it's kind of alright, whereas the Pro is the ultimate with a few more bits and bobs, let's just say that. Both phones kind of come with 256 gigabytes of storage, with 512 gigabytes being on the Pro. You get a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 processor, X70 modem, pretty much up to 12 gigabytes of RAM, 8 gigabytes options also available on the regular 13 in a way. And really both phones come with 67 watt the regular, forgive me if I'm getting this wrong here, but correct me here if I'm wrong, you get 67 watt wired fast charging, 50 watt wireless fast charging, so 67 wired, 50 watt wireless, and 10 watt wireless fast charging, reverse. Whereas the Pro, the biggest difference is you get a slightly bigger battery than the regular. The regular has 4500, whereas the Pro has 4800 milliamps. You get 120 watt wired fast charging, along with 50 watt wireless and 10 watt reverse wireless fast charging. So that's pretty cool in a way. Both can do dual speakers with Atmos. Both come with Wi-Fi 7 and Bluetooth 5.3 connectivity. 5G is out of the gate on both phones, so it comes with mid-band, low-band 5G comfortably without issue. So it's a pretty interesting phone in a way, and as far as I understand it, okay, I've got the pricing also. It came out many, many days ago. The 13 will start at a slightly higher 1,000 euros for the base spec and 1,300 euros for the 13 Pro. So it's already on the premium end of the spectrum. Now, if that's, but then again, for top-notch cameras, processors, really the best of best from Xiaomi, you can't go wrong with the 13 and 13 Pro in a way. But if you're kind of broke, let's just say that, if cost of living has been biting you in England, or I don't know, you're paying more and more for your electricity, or just generally your eggs cost more, there's the Xiaomi 13 Lite. This one is a bit of a Samsung A73 killer, let's just say that. Let's just say that. If the A73 has been out for a bit, it's competing with the A series from Samsung neck and neck. The real difference, the overwhelming difference, really, let's just say that it's a touch bit lighter from the regular 13. It's got a 50 megapixel wide angle camera, IMX766 sensor, in case you're wondering, 8 megapixel ultra wide, 2 megapixel macro, 32 megapixel selfie shooter, and the light has 8 megapixel depth, so I think they work hand in hand, whereas the 13 and the 13 Pro have a regular single selfie camera, but it looks nice on the front. You get 120 Hz, 6.55-inch FHD plus display, and that's it. No variable refresh rates, so you can run it at 120 and bring it all the way down to 60 in the settings. So that's kind of a bummer, but that's all right. Another big downgrade you'll get is the 7 Gen 1 chip from Qualcomm. A whole lot slower than the 8 Gen 2. It's far below even the 8 plus Gen 1. So that's something to keep in mind. I mean, if you're looking for some like flagship, then I think the other phone that I'm obviously going to mention later on will be a better option than this. You get 8 gigabytes of RAM exclusively, 128 or 256 gigabytes of storage, 4500 milliamp hour battery, and only 67 watt wired fast charging. And all phones kind of come with adaptive charge from Xiaomi, so again, keeps your battery nice and safe and well under control without it being ruined because you're charging it overly quite quickly. And you're wondering about the price because if you want to save money on this, in a way, the light costs around 500 euros according to the press release here. It might be more or less depending on where you live. Best is to obviously check from your local retailer for actual prices or how much it'll cost where you live. So that's pretty interesting. I mean, what can I say? It's a pretty solid. It really is Xiaomi's flagship series, a masterpiece in its own right, in a way. One thing to keep in mind is that it will come with MIUI 14, which runs on Android 13, if my memory serves correct. We double check the press release for this one. Should mention it somewhere. Does it? Yes, MIUI 14 with Android 13. You get 3 years of software updates according to Xiaomi, so that's pretty awesome in a way, and 5 years of security updates, monthly security updates, so that's pretty interesting in a way. You can get as if you get the global variant, you'll get access to 6 months of free Google One as a trial, so you can check that out if you want to. And apparently, again, this is I think thanks to Google, these the 13 and the 13 Pro will allow you to you can use these phones as car keys, like on the iPhone, and support certain brands like BMW, where you can sort of use it to unlock your car. So that's pretty cool in a way. And in case you're still not convinced why you should get a Xiaomi flagship, and so much so, you can get 1 hour repair warranty without any labor cost attached for the first 12 months after purchasing. When you register your warranty, wherever you are in the world, you can get 1 hour of warranty repair. That could be a screen crack. That could probably be, it really could be any issue sort of that is caused. It's outside of the standard worldwide warranty. You can get that done, and I think that's another solid selling point I mean, you gotta convince people to buy the flagship phone, so you gotta offer something unique. Kind of honest for them that they are doing that. Overall, the Xiaomi 13 is the all-rounder Android flagship phone. The 13 Pro is the high-end flagship with a top-notch camera and high-res display. Though it is disappointing to see the variable refresh rate functionality, the 1-120 Hz display, being limited to just the Pro variant, given how much these phones are costing. The 13 starts at €1,000 minimum, and it should have this functionality, or at this point should be €200 cheaper given what you're dealing with. But yeah, as I said, that's not the only thing Xiaomi showed off at their event many days back. Earlier this week, they also showed off some new wearables and also ecosystem products, as they call it. First was their smartwatch, the Xiaomi Watch S1 Pro, which is basically a premium smartwatch in a way, and it looks nice to start with in a way. You have 1.47-inch AMOLED display, rotatable crown, scratch-resistant sapphire crystal, so it's a premium watch to start with. It comes in two different colors, a silver case and a brown leather strap, and a black case with a black fluoro rubber strap. So it's a bit rubber strap, basically, if you think about it. And yeah, it gives you access to 100 sports act tracking on over 100 sports activities, 10 different pre-built modes for run walk combinations, fat burn training, internal training, especially for, according to the press release, heart and lung health. And again, it gives you access to tracking for calories burn, exercise intensity, sleep monitoring, heart rate, and blood oxygen tracking. So that's pretty cool. You get 14 days of battery life on this. This is a premium smartwatch, so keep that in mind. 14 days of battery life, 10-minute charge will give you 2 days of use, which is pretty interesting. And yeah, as I said, it costs €300, so it's a premium watch in a way. And on the other hand is the Xiaomi Buds 4 Pro. So these two go hand in hand with the Xiaomi 13 and 13 Pro. The Buds 4 Pro, as we'll call them, features 11-millimeter driver. It supports wireless Hi-Fi audio codec, so it's LDAC, if I remember correctly, per the live event. It's got head tracking and immersive audio, so it's kind of like the Apple AirPods Pro almost. It even does active noise cancellation up to 48 decibels, so that's something to keep in mind. So it's again right up there with the Sonys and the Apple and the Bose earbuds, and even stuff from Anker, almost in the same league. In terms of battery life and use, you get up to 9 hours on a single charge from the charging case, and the charging case gives you up to 38 hours of listening. It costs €249, so again, it's quite premium, and it's right up there with the AirPods Pro and whatever Sony brings to the table. So that's pretty cool in a way. And then after that, they showed off a top-notch electric scooter with 70 kilometers of range, IP55 water and dust resistance, improved dual suspension, and it costs around €1,000. Certainly on the high end of the e-scooter market, but then again, it is cheaper than a used hatchback car. I don't know if you heard that noise, so I apologize in advance. Mistakes happen, you know. But yeah, it's an interesting set of premium devices, basically premium offerings that Xiaomi offers for the European market. And yeah, as I said, pretty top-notch stuff if you ask me. But we haven't even stopped at that in a way. They went on, I think, the following day to show off a concept AR glass. And this concept is the Xiaomi Wireless AR Glass Discovery Edition, again for the Mobile World Congress this year. And it's this AR glasses, they're wireless, so they have a high-speed connection. They run on the XR2 Gen 1 chip from Qualcomm, along with their very own custom low-latency communication link with your phone. They support Snapdragon Space's XR platform, which is pretty interesting. And that kind of means that, as I said, they give you a wireless latency of about as low as 3 milliseconds, according to Xiaomi. So that's pretty interesting. It weighs 126 grams. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Basically, how it works is you connect your phone to the glasses, again, wirelessly, between your phone and the glasses. And you use content, you could see content through your glasses from your phone. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And it's being a concept, it's quite lightweight. It's made out of magnesium lithium alloy. I think that's the battery. Well, I think that's the frame. Carbon fiber parts and a self-developed silicon oxygen anode battery. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And I've done a lot of R&D behind these AR glasses, analyzing tens of thousands of head tracking data samples. The glasses have been calibrated with precision, taking into account details such as the center of gravity, leg spacing, angle, nose rest, and other factors that contribute to a superior experience. All this to say is that they've kind of worked on this, and if they do release a production version of it, it'll probably be impressive to start with, in a way. On top of that, they also feature, where did it go here? If you're wondering about AR glasses, it comes with a pair of micro LED OLED screens, giving, and again, it's done through this freeform light guiding prism, sort of into a, into a frame. As I said, you get 2 eye brightness up to 1200 nit, so it's good for AR generally speaking. You don't need to tint the glasses generally. They're kind of art tinted from the get-go, but yeah, I mean, it should give you a crystal clear image at that level. They're basically the first AR glasses, according to them, to achieve retina level display. So that's basically pixel per degree of 60. That's, then that's where the human eye cannot distinguish, lines. Whereas the Xiaomi concept achieves a pixel per degree of 58 PPD, so almost approaching, you can't even see the lines on the display, tiny display. So that's pretty impressive, and you gotta applaud all this innovation for what it. You gotta give credit where it's due. So that's pretty awesome, in a way. And again, it comes with micro gesture interaction, in a sense. So you can use your fingers in front of the glasses to control it, in a way. And as I said, it's quite interesting to start with. And AR glasses are kind of cool. Again, when you connect your phone, it's totally something else. You can access VR apps and experiences in augmented reality, and even consume content, which I think is the best use case of AR glasses. But as I said, it's pretty cool to see Xiaomi, generally speaking, work on a concept like this. It clearly shows that the next big wave in gadgets, how I look at it, is AR and VR glasses. And once Apple, once Meta and HTC Vive really figure out the segment and offer more affordable options, and once Apple enters the scene, it'll definitely be, the whole sphere will be going into another stratosphere, let's just say that. So yeah, pretty impressive stuff from Xiaomi, nonetheless. All right, moving on from masterpieces to some honorable and magical phones. Can't believe I've said that. Don't know how you have the energy to still produce puns, but all right. Honor, also probably the following day, pretty much, Honor showed off their new flagships that they already launched in China, the Magic 5 and the Magic VS, which essentially are their flagships, let's say that. Now, the thing about the Magic 5 and 5 Pro is, at least the Magic 5 kind of, I think, is a slightly better priced product overall. And you, again, get an 8 Gen 2 for the price. I'll probably mention it a little bit down the road. But in terms of specs, specs-wise, the regular Magic 5 comes with a 6.73-inch 2,688 by 1,224 pixel display, 92.68% screen to body ratio OLED, and again, should mention here high refresh rate, but that's kind of fine in a way. You get a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 processor, Android 13 out of the gate, Magic OS 7.1, 12 gigabytes of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage, 54 megapixel main wide-angle camera, 50-megapixel ultra-wide, 32-megapixel telephoto, and you get 2.5x optical and 50x digital zoom with OIS. So that's pretty interesting, along with a 12-megapixel front-facing camera. Both support 4K video recording, so that's pretty cool. And you get 66-watt fast charging out of the gate maximum. with a 5100 milliamp hour battery. That's the typical, but the actual is 5000 milliamp hours in a way. And yeah, supports honors his own supercharge, which can start from roughly 40 watts, can go all the way to 66 watts. So that's pretty interesting in a way. So you got options 4G and 5G is available on this too, dual SIM included, which is surprising. You get Wi-Fi 7, again, that's because of Gen 2, generally speaking, and Bluetooth 5.2, not 5.3, but then again, not a big deal for now. NFC supported, so if you've been looking for that, that's definitely there. An infrared sensor is also there, so that's pretty cool in a way. And yes, you get the charger in the box, that's written in the spec sheet, so that's something to take into consideration. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting phone. Is this so it comes in Glacier Blue, so it's a bit matte finish from the pictures, and black, which is glossy, so that's quite glossy, so in case you're wondering. So that's pretty interesting. The Pro, on the other hand, though, is a touch bit heavier, being the Pro. This comes at 6.81 inch, 2848 by 1312 display, 120 hertz maximum at best, OLED in a way. And apparently it's a quad curved floating display, so that's interesting in a way. Same chip, 8 Gen 2, that's pretty cool in a way. Same operating system, you get double the storage with this one, 2 gigabytes of RAM also. So again, a little bit more storage and a beefier display and beefier cameras. You get a triple 50 megapixel rear camera with three 50 megapixel sensors of different lengths and sizes. They have periscope telephoto lens, comes with 3.5x optical zoom, 100x digital zoom, and optical image stabilization. This puts the Magic 5 Pro neck and neck with the Galaxy S23 Ultra, literally competing with that. It's playing with the Samsungs, and so much so that in during Honor's event, they made a lot of unhealthy amounts of comparisons with Samsung's flagship, which I think is a good thing, because you know, Android versus Android, gotta see that more often. Some brands love to be like, we're better than the iPhone 14 Pro, and we're like $500 cheaper than them. I don't see it's silly, and it's not the same, you know, it doesn't hit the same, and it's not the same comparison per se. Anyways, I digress. And so for the selfie camera, same 12 megapixel front-facing camera with a 3D depth camera, so you can do their own version of Face ID, which is, I think, is pretty cool. 4K video recording on both, and yeah, you can even get a combined electronic and optical image stabilization, so that's pretty cool in a way. And 5,000 mAh power battery, 66 watt fast charging, like the regular Magic 5. Same cellular support, dual SIM cards out of the gate, in a way. Oh, and apparently, a second SIM card can be used either as a nano SIM if there's micro SD card support, probably. That is, but it just says you can set up as either an eSIM or a nano card, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And as you get Wi-Fi 7, on this phone, and USB OTG. So if you've been looking for that, then that's included. And again, some other bits and bobs, just like the regular Honor Magic 5. So a lot of magic for over 1,000 euros. So that's pretty interesting. So the Pro, as I said, is the much nicer and elegant. According to Honor, it's quite human-centric, which is what they're going for: human-centric design and features. So that's the thing about the Honor phones, generally. You get peak HDR brightness, by the way, of 1800 nits generally, and again, should be high refresh rate. They've made no mention of it in the spec sheet, but should be there in the settings if you want to do that generally. It comes with its own discrete display. The Pro actually comes with a discrete display chipset, improving the overall quality and frame rate performance generally, and reduces flickering and stuff like that. So that's important. The interesting part is the Honor Magic 5 and 5 Pro and the VS Magic VS all come with low blue light emission and eye comfort functionality, which includes bits like circadian night display for improved sleep quality, and an industry first, and this is on the Pro, an industry first LTPO display with 2160 Hz pulse width modulation dimming. So that's the thing, and it improves eye comfort, and apparently the dynamic dimming estimates natural light, so it alleviates eye fatigue. And again, I think that's a healthy feature. It all comes back to Honor offering, as I said, human-centric design to, allowing people to use their phones more often, but again, not putting their eyes at jeopardy, because blue light is real, that's for sure. And the Pro, on the other hand, speaking of which, with the cameras, it has a triple 50-megapixel camera, millisecond Falcon capture algorithm, so it allows you to take complex scenes with remarkable ease and clarity. And Super Night Capture is there, so it offers improved low light performance with all that AI computational processing in a way. And again, comes with all sorts of interesting features that if you kind of have the time and the money, you definitely want to check out. That is, so yeah, the thing about the Magic 5 series, the Pro especially, the Magic 5 Pro, you get stunning colors. Kind of matte finish, matte glass finish, triple 50 megapixel cameras, the 8 Gen 2, and the eye comfort functionality, which may or may not come in handy, if you ask me, in a way. And 66 watt fast charging, so it's a pretty solid phone. You're getting quite a lot for your money. And the Honor Magic 5 Pro costs around 1200 euros. That's the base spec. That's the regular spec, pretty much, for half a terabyte. Whereas the Magic 5 will cost 900 euros. So that's pretty interesting. And will apparently be available from the second quarter of this year. So I think that's the start, end of spring, start of summer. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But that's not the most magical thing that they've showed off. They've also shown off their first global folding phone. They're going to launch on the global market. Now, the thing about Honor is that they've been selling phones in China, of course. That's a fact. But also, they've been selling phones around the world. But more than everything, they've already kind of been selling foldables in China for a bit. But they've not released a foldable for the global market. But that changes today with the Magic VS. It's their first foldable phone for the rest of the world. Let's just say that, in a way. They've had the Magic V, which was released in China only. But VS is obviously for the whole wide world, including the Chinese market and the rest of the world, in a way. Overall, it's quite compact, let's just say. It's large enough to be your regular phone, according to Honor. And that's how they've made their foldables, see what I mean by human-centric design. It measures as 12.9 millimeters when folded and 267 grams in weight. And despite all that, it comes with, guess this, get a 5,000 mAh battery. That's pretty impressive that they've packed that big enough battery. Now, you're probably wondering how they pulled that off. Apparently, according to them, they've created a revolutionary super light gearless hinge, which has been carefully crafted using single-piece casting technology. That's their words, not mine. And that means that a typical foldable hinge would have 92 components, typically. That would probably be the case for the Magic V. But they've managed to bring it all the way down to 4 parts. So it's quite, it's super light, as in the name. It's, there are not too many gears going on. But it can withstand 400,000 folds based on tests by TÜV Rheinland. They've used a lot of their tests for other features, but generally it's kind of like on the level of the Oppo Flip phone, which has been rated for a similar amount. So it can withstand 10 years of use, which is, again, not surprising, but as I said, right up there with, say, Oppo and many, many, much, much more. Again, because it's that compact and that interesting hinge, it can completely seal shut without any gap at the hinge part, at the area the screens fold. So it's completely flat and closed, so it kind of helps. Other than that, really, it has a 6.45 inch IR display, 21 by 9 aspect ratio, again, human-centric as in the overall experience, a 7.9 inch internal display on the inside, 7.9 inches, so you can do a lot of things, multitask, consume content, text your friends while watching YouTube. So that's all fun. And again, comes with a lot of the eye comfort functions of the Magic 5 series, because it came more or less the same time in China. So it should have those features, and now they're bringing it to a global audience, which I think is nice to start with. Now here's the other big difference, is that the Magic VS will be coming with the 8 Plus Gen 1 chip from Qualcomm. So that's pretty interesting. On top of all the AI boosts that Honor is going to be adding to the phone, generally speaking, on top of all of that, the Magic VS is equipped with a triple camera system, surprising for a folding phone, especially a notebook-style folding phone. 54-megapixel IMX800 main, 50-megapixel ultrawide, and both ultrawide and macro, so that's pretty awesome, and a 3x optical zoom, 8-megapixel camera. So you're getting a lot of punch for your camera, in a way. It's not slacking, let's just say, compared to the Samsung. If you really compare it to the Samsung, they're giving you a bigger battery generally, and some beefy cameras, and some AI processing, let's just say that, optimizations driven by AI. So because that's the thing that sets it apart from Samsung and other brands, let's just say that. The Honor Magic VS will cost 1600 euros, and this is the biggest downside, I believe, with this folding phone. It is more or less getting priced around the same price as Z Fold 4, which I think it's its comparison, let's just say that. And I think you get the unique hinge that could last a little longer than the competition. You're probably getting more or less the same displays inside, outside, let's just say that. You get beefier battery and cameras, so I can see where they're coming at with the cost value proposition, let's the MVP here. But as I said, I watched Mr. Mobile's video on the Magic VS. He played around with it for a bit before the event. He posted the video. I'll link it in the show notes so you can check it out when you're free. And I think I agree with him on this one. Honor is not an established brand enough such that they could obviously afford to run out and like charge a lot of money for these phones. And, you know, and the Samsung's foldables have not only been out for over half a year at this point, but they've been getting some pretty good discounts in different countries. In his video, he was mentioning that if you want, in Spain, for example, if the VS is, Honor's is foldable, is 1600 euros, not only you can get the Samsung for like 200-300 euros cheaper-ish, less than that, but you can even get a free TV, or probably a discount code to a free TV. So that's pretty interesting, and I think I agree with him on that point, even though I've not played around with the phone enough. And it was running pre-release software, so that's the big difference. So we'll have to see on actual reviews down the road in a few months' time how well the phone fares, let's just say that. These are quite magical phones, but more interesting is what Honor's been kind of working on behind the scenes. At the event, generally, they announced that they developed the first silicon carbon battery in the industry that gives you 240% more capacity at 3.5 volts when the phone is way less than 20%. So it gives you still a bit more mileage compared to the competition. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And you get 12.8% higher energy density. So it can pack in the same area of the Magic 5 Pro, a 5100 mAh battery. You can pack in a 5450 milliamp hour battery, so slightly more. We're talking 350 milliamps extra on top of whatever you're already getting, but it's not surprising. I think there's already been a lot of work with mixing up battery chemistries. You see in EVs, in China especially, a lot of Chinese EVs are coming with different chemical mixes, so I'm not surprised if some of that technology is really moving into phones, given how much work is done in China with this technology in a way. According to GSM Arena, and they've put that claim, that in China, the Magic 5 Pro, the Chinese variant, has that larger capacity battery, so it might be already be coming with the silicon carbon battery generally, whereas the global variant is going to be sticking to a lithium ion standard graphite battery, which is interesting. But then I think there would also be the software tweaks that would be required. But they said that, obviously, next couple of phones, they did not mention if they're going to be which phone they might be using this technology in, but if they've already rolled it out in one variant, don't be surprised if they do roll it out in a future model, where they do figure out the technology, they do manage to scale it beyond just the testing phase of, God knows how many f the first 1,000 phones. So that's pretty interesting. Alright, this next part includes some static noise in the background. That's just I'm charging my laptop, and it likes to do that. Maybe I'll try to tone this noise down as best as I can. But yeah, moving on, Techno. Techno releases lots of phones on the low end of the market, and even the mid-range to start with, and they've had their Phantom series of phones. That's pretty interesting. And now, they've also made a folding phone of their own, surprisingly. The Phantom V Fold, as we'll call it, is an interesting folding phone. And we're just gonna get straight to it. You have 120 hertz, 6.42 inch display on the outside, and on the inside you have a 7.85 inch, 120 hertz display, LTPO, 2000 by 2296 pixels. So a touch bit, a little. Now in the pictures, it's a whole lot taller than the Samsung Z Fold 4, generally speaking. So that's pretty interesting, and obviously it's a little taller than the Samsung in retrospect, more or less. Yeah, 50 megapixel main camera, 50 megapixel 2x zoom camera on the outside, and 30 megapixel ultra wide camera, and you got selfie cameras on the inside and the outside. So 30 megapixel on the outside and 16 megapixel on the inside. So that's pretty interesting in a way. MediaTek Dimensity 9000 Plus chip, more or less the same, on the same level as the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, like on the Galaxy Z Fold 4 or the Honor Magic VS that we talked about earlier. A 5000, get this, 5000 mAh power battery with 45 watt fast charging. So that's pretty interesting, and it's around 300 grams. So that's pretty interesting. So it's kind of competing in the same alley as Honor, but the price is pretty interesting. It's Technos are known for making slightly more competitively priced phones a little more affordable. Although even though they might be compromising in a whole bunch of areas, but they're still affordable when you compare to the competition, even comparing to Samsung. They're launching this foldable in India. And it's going to start at around 90,000 Indian rupees, which is about $1,100 for the base spec 256 gig variant. Double the storage, it'll be available at around 1 lakh Indian rupees, or 100,000 rupees. That's $1,222 for the maxed out spec, and you can get $100 off on it. They're running an early bird offer, I think maybe on Amazon or Flipkart, so you can check it out if you have the time. But under $1,300 for a folding phone. Although keep in mind, you might be getting cameras that may not be as snappy as sharp or interesting as Samsung's. You might not be getting the Snapdragon chip. You're getting the Dimensity 9000 Plus, if you really don't care about the chip. There's no mention of the hinge, weirdly. There might be a typical hinge like it is with the Samsung, more or less. But you're getting it at a pretty good price compared to the competition. So it's pretty interesting, nonetheless, in a way.
Moving on, Realme has launched the global variant of its GT Neo 5 smartphone called the Realme GT3. It's Realme's latest flagship smartphone. The GT3 comes with a 4600 mAh battery with, get this, 240 watt fast charging, one of the fastest out there, technically. Not as fast as the next one that I'll be mentioning, but again, it's all still while using USB-C. And this comes along with the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip and a whole bevy of features. Interestingly, the fast charging, how it works is that you have got three different ICs, kind of, or chips that have a maximum 100 watts. So overall, it should go up to 300, but it's up to 240 for safety purposes. And so much so that Realme needed to make its very own USB-C cable rated at 12 amps. So you can do the math over there. It's over 10, or probably over 8 to 12 volts of power to make it
capable of fast charging. As I said, it comes with a pretty cool camera. They did not talk much in detail about the camera. It's probably perfect for what it is. Apparently it has a IMX 890 flagship camera with optical image stabilization, the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip, and as I said, the 240-watt fast charging, which means you can get a full charge in 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes, technically. You get a 50-megapixel main camera, that's the IMX 890, an 8-megapixel ultra-wide, and a 2-megapixel micro scope, so they can do micro, you can zoom in and take some good shots, and a 60-megapixel selfie camera, a 6.74-inch, 144Hz, 10-bit AMOLED display, and basically the global variant of the GT Neo 5, that was launched in China a few months back. This is Realme's top-of-the-line phone that they offer for those looking to get a high-end Realme phone overall. It's interesting, pretty much. I got nothing else to say, really. It's got a pulse interface at the back, so it has a circle, and it pulses in over 25 different colors. And obviously tells you when the shutter goes off of the camera, or for example, for countdowns, or even for call notifications. Kind of like the Glyph interface on the Nothing Phone 1, more or less. It's basically Realme's take on that. But overall, it's just an interesting phone. It comes in a whole bunch of storage and memory configurations. It starts from 8GB of RAM all the way up to 16GB of RAM. And 128GB all the way up to 1TB. Haven't seen a Realme phone with 1TB of storage, by the way. The base spec will start from apparently $650. So you're paying a pretty penny for a Realme flagship. Part of me thinks that they should charge around $500. It's kind of underwhelming for what you're getting. This kind of phone should be costing at least like $550, not to be selfish, but around $550 starting out. So that would probably make a whole lot of sense in a way. So, but as I said, it's a pretty interesting flagship from Realme. And on top of that, they obviously talked about overall their brand goals and what they're up to as a brand. So on top of their smartphone, Realme looks to grow in Europe and Middle East. And this phone's sort of part of that offensive to get into European markets and build a market share. This will kind of be a phone that will sell all right in Asia, but they need to obviously, this phone needs to really be moving volumes in Europe for them to gain a top 5 market share. That's what they're looking for. But also really, they have a goal of offering 33-watt or higher fast charging on over 90% of the phones, according to them. And it's quite lofty given that Counterpoint Research ranked Realme as number one amongst smartphone brands offering fast charging on phones under $150. But then again, Counterpoint's is like definition of what is fast charging is around 10 watts or higher fast charging. So kind of makes sense. Some of their C phones come with 10 watt charging minimum. So that kind of makes sense in a way. So again, pretty interesting to see from Realme what they have in general. Moving on, HMD Global has shown off some new phones for MWC 2023. One of those is apparently easier to repair, according to them, really. And again, it should be easier to repair the battery, the screen, and the charging port relatively compared to the competition. And this phone is called the Nokia G22 to start with. For battery repairs, there's no need to heat up the back of the phone to access the battery. Plus, they've teamed up with iFixit to offer tools and guides to help folks fix the phone. I won't go much into details. This is basically like a low to mid-range phone in that area, slightly higher above the low end of the market. But it's a sub €200 phone, and basically got basic specs for a decent smartphone, letting you know use WhatsApp, check social media. It's not bad, you know, it will do the job. But also, I think it's smart for HMD to really make a phone, and this kind of phone would be selling a lot in Europe, where people are quite conscious about right to repair and the environment and e-waste. And so they really have hit a target market fairly well with this phone. Like, they're really targeting a segment of consumers who want a really basic smartphone, but also they don't want another piece of e-waste. So it's pretty interesting in a way. But the bigger deal, other than HMD making more Nokia phones, is Nokia, the actual brand themselves. The bigger deal really is the actual Nokia is getting a refreshed logo, which looks nothing like the old logo. But the reason they changed it is to put emphasis on the fact that Nokia, not the HMD one, the actual company that focuses on networking, is more of an enterprise networking player. And it's moved on with the times and is, in their words, open, fearless, and empowered. And, quote-unquote, a B2B technology innovation leader pioneering the future where networks meet the cloud. It's fancy corporate speak, but again, I can kind of see why they've changed the logo. They just don't want to be distinguished with their past, which was being once used to be the world's biggest phone brand. But now they're more or less a shell of the former past. But they're still thriving. They're doing fine, kind of, in the world of networking and cellular equipment, given the fact that Huawei has kind of been blocked out of the US and European market to a degree. And so Nokia's kind of had a bit of a saving grace. So their 5G gear has been selling at hotcakes in a way. So that's pretty interesting, nonetheless. Snapchat, moving on, Snapchat is launching its own AI chatbot based on OpenAI's ChatGPT, or GPT 3.5 technology called My AI. It's their take on the hit ChatGPT. It uses OpenAI Foundry, a tool allowing companies to offer their own AI products using OpenAI's algorithms, according to CEO of Snapchat, or Snap Incorporated, its parent company, Ewan Spiegel. This big idea is that, in addition to talking to our friends and family every day, we're going to talk to AI every day, and this is something we're well positioned to do as a messaging service. End quote. It's only available to Snapchat Plus subscribers at the moment, with plans for a wider rollout down the road. Spotify has replaced the hard button with a plus in a new update now rolling out to its iOS and Android apps. Users who previously liked a song could press the hard button now, users who previously liked the song, they can just press the hard button, let's just say that, can now do just that with a plus button, and it's added. And whatever you like, let's just say with a plus button, it'll be added to a liked songs playlist. Another press of the icon will let you add it to any playlist in your account. It's just a small UI tweak, but then again, it goes a long way. Alright, moving back to smartphones for another hot minute. If you thought Realme's 240-watt fast charging was really fast, wait till you see what Xiaomi has in store. It's showing off 300-watt fast charging in a demo video shared on their Weibo account, generally on social media, showing a modified Redmi Note 12 Pro getting charged from 0 to 100 in just 5 minutes. Okay, this is, almost feels like it's getting out of hand, so there's nothing much I can say. I mean, how far can you go with fast charging? It's going to get boring eventually, you know. It's, my fast charging's bigger than yours, you know. It's going to be that sizing comparison that no one wants. Samsung, on the other hand, has announced that they've sort of developed 5G non-terrestrial network technology, which allows basically phones to communicate, send data and texts, full two-way text messaging, HD image and video sharing or via satellite. A little different from what Apple and others have been going on about. And also MediaTek and Qualcomm offering their own satellite connectivity, which basically lets you send compressed text messages, or Samsung's options let you share videos, photos, full-blown two-way text messaging. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And they've sort of built that standard, apparently. And according to one of Samsung's executive vice presidents, one of the executives, this milestone builds on a rich legacy in wireless communications technologies following the introduction of the industry's first commercial 4G LTE modem in 2009 and industry's first 5G modem in 2018. Samsung aims to take the lead in advancing hybrid terrestrial NTN non-terrestrial network communication ecosystems around the world in preparation for the arrival of 6G. And we all know, and if you live in the world of telecommunications, you've been reading the trends, 6G is kind of, apparently according to experts, when satellite connectivity will basically become as standard as peanut butter and jelly and sliced bread. Literally. I mean, that last part was ridiculous, but that gives you a ton context as where we're headed. Apparently, they've developed the Exynos modem 5300, which can do a 5G non-terrestrial, as we'll call it, and that modem aids in accurately predicting and minimizing frequency offsets caused by a Doppler effect, interestingly, and basically can let you do full-blown texting, so it's much more effective in emergencies and even day-to-day uses where you just need to send a message but you don't have a signal anywhere in general. And again, apparently the standard is set to assist in ensuring interoperability and scalability among devices from lots of telecom providers and phone makers and all. So they really want this to become a major standard in a way, but it's not surprising given that the current Galaxy S23 series, given that it has the Snapdragon chipsets, did not really come with Qualcomm's just like satellite connectivity support, because according to them, they didn't see a need for it. But more than everything, they probably might be working on something more advanced than whatever Qualcomm can deliver. So it's interesting in a way. And then while we're at it with Mobile World Congress and topics like 5G private networks and even concept smartphones and stuff like that, OnePlus showed off their OnePlus 11 concept. It's quite interesting, and those lines you saw at the back of the phone, if you've seen the pictures all over the internet, was this thing called active cryoflex cooling, and apparently it reduces the overall temperature of the phone by 1.6 degrees to 2.1 degrees Celsius while using it a full blast. So that's pretty interesting in a way, and helps the phone charge a little bit better. So it uses industrial grade piezoelectric ceramic micro pump running across the back of the device. It takes up very little space within the concept, but overall the liquid kind of flows from one direction to the next. So you know how it goes: hot liquids go up and cool liquids cool down. So that kind of creates this and the idea is that this cooling liquid flowing around the camera and sort of the back of the phone creates this icy blue halo effect. I mean, overall, it's a concept OnePlus 11 that they sort of played around with. Interestingly, it's similar to liquid cooling in p gaming PCs. That's what some people are saying. So that's pretty interesting. It'll be cool to see if they bring this out in the future. But OnePlus is known for making concept phones in a way. According to Makotara, next post, they shared a post in Weibo. We don't know if this is true or not. It might be true at the end. Apple's looking to release a new color variant of the iPhone 14 in yellow. It was all yellow all along. Not surprising given that on previous iPhones they've offered a yellow version, but they didn't do it for the iPhone 14. So they could bring it out. And Apple has this thing middle of the year around the spring to add a spring color update. So it might be happening. Who knows? We'll find out this coming week, pretty much. Next week, kind of, in a way. So that's interesting. In a sense. And finally, we're nearing the 1 hour mark, let's just say that. Can't believe I'm saying that. But BMW's has made a hydrogen fuel cell car and it's now out on the roads. So they've launched a pilot fleet of the iX5 Hydrogen, which is their first fuel cell vehicle. Uses fuel cells from Toyota, which because Toyota is a leader in hydrogen fuel cell technology, it made the Mirai for a very long time. And it's a unique concept, electric vehicle, a fuel cell EV, let's just say that. It has a high performance battery with that fuel cell attached, and again, it has that fifth gen eDrive from on the rear. That's obviously the motor for to make it fuel cell EV, and it has two 700 bar tanks made from carbon fiber reinforced plastic. I'm sure these materials for the fuel cell have come from Toyota, as in the press release. The refueling takes 3 to 4 minutes, and you get 504 kilometers on a WLTP scale. So that's pretty interesting. So you can go quite long distance in a way. And this was developed in their Munich Research and Innovation Center. If you're watching the video version, you'd see the picture of the car behind that building. So that's pretty interesting in a way. It's a pretty awesome concept vehicle. Really, there's nothing quite like it. And but then again, it's a concept, and BMW may not even release it in the future. This again, they're probably seeing taking this as an idea what they can do with offering alternate fuels and, you know, things other than internal combustion engines. So that's pretty interesting nonetheless. Alrighty, this leads us to the end of today's episode. It's taken me many days and lots of procrastination to get to this, but usually we do not record well over an hour of a podcast. We can do it, but you guys will get bored and you'll stop listening. And we're already past the 1 hour mark. So, you know, I usually don't do it, but I'll try to make sure. I promise in the next couple of episodes we're going to keep it, as always, to less than half an hour each episode. But yeah, what do you think of everything you've heard today so far? We've come this far, past 1 hour. I really appreciate you guys listening to this podcast. You know, I mean, not to say that it's my, like, hobby or that I love to do this, but again, it's something quite productive, you know, like, it's a good use of time, and I'm not sitting around watching YouTube or browsing TikTok. Like, I'm talking about things I'm really into, and I really appreciate all your support. I mean, keep listening, keep sharing it to your friends and family, and all that kind of good stuff. If you like anything you've heard today, or you want to give your thoughts or feedback, follow me, send me a message over on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I'm at Said_Mount99. Follow me there if you can. Send me a message right there. I'm happy to respond, talk with you anytime. There's also the details in the show notes, so you can check that out, and links if you want to check out more in general. And yeah, till next week, this is Obama signing out. Where we are, what are we up to? I hope you have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend ahead. And thank you for listening. Have an awesome day, all right? Ciao.